Hi, everybody. So let's get started. Welcome to our philosophy discussion. It's wonderful to have you all here. It's something that Mike and I have been talking about doing for a long time, and we're finally doing it this year. Because we feel like very often we are not back at basics, and people don't know, you know, what do we stand for? Who are we? How do we arrive at some of the decisions we arrive at? And a lot has to do with how we feel. Because I think a lot of people who are members of our organization are members because of our common bond. And that being that bond that gives us the independence, that gives us the desire for independence that we have, and the desire for equality and so forth, you know, the whole drill. So what we generally do is give you a situation, and then we talk about it and how it works and how we would handle it. We let everybody talk about how we would handle it, and I'm thinking that Kevin, our national rep, will be in here soon. And I know Carl will be coming in a little while. And so they'll be taking part in the discussion as well. So here's the scenario. You're getting a chance to present, to talk to a group of people that you've been wanting to talk to for a long time. And you're getting the opportunity to talk to the people about a subject that you've worked very hard at, that you've thought through for a long time. Maybe it's something that where you excel, and almost nobody knows as much as you know in this field, in the world. And so this is your opportunity to talk to an audience about this. You're really excited about it. And it's just about time for you to go up, and someone comes to you, someone you know, and says, "Hi, I'll walk up with you. You don't need to use your dog or your cane because I'll be with you." And what goes through your mind real quickly is, "Oh my God, all this time I've been working on my independence, I've been working on who I am. I don't want to take somebody's arm to go up there. I want to go my own way. I know how to do this. I've already checked it out. I know where the stage is. I know where the steps are. I want to do this myself." But on the other hand, in that split second it takes you to go out to say that to yourself, you also have to say, "How long will it take me to explain this to this person that I know quite well? How long will it take me to explain it to them? Is it going to take so long that there's going to be this little quiet, you know, dead air going on stage while I'm trying to explain it? If I do that, I'm going to look equally weird. So what do I do?" What would you do? So the rules of the game are, you call your name, I will recognize, or Mike will recognize you by you calling your name. When I say your name, raise your hand, and Mike will bring a mic to you. Okay? And so it's opened. What would you do? Call your name.
Harold.
You mentioned the idea of using a cane or a dog going up to a podium or something. So you use your cane or your dog, go up to your podium, because that's what you use every day. I mean, the person that says, "I'll take you up there," I'll tell them where to go. I would. I mean, I tell you, I don't need your help. I have my game. I know where the podium is. And no, it's true.
Okay, so...
if you're independent, you're independent. If you want to be independent, you can't depend on someone else. Otherwise, you're... let's say you're a phony.
Okay, I'll recognize Joyce.
It's true.
Joyce?
Don't worry, I think somebody might.
I think, for me, the first rule, excuse me,
The first rule in dealing with the public is that however you, in a sense, you're rejecting their help in a way, however you do it, it's preferable to do it in as nice a way as possible. So you leave on nice terms. And so I would say to them, you know, thank you very much. I know you mean well, but I can manage this myself. And unless the person is really put out to the point where it will cost you more time, that's the way I would handle it.
Okay, so you're saying, you're just going to say to the person's going to say, let me take you up. You don't need your dog or your cane. I'll just take you up there. And you say, you know what? I don't think I'm good. I don't think I really need any help. Thanks anyway. That's what you're saying, right? Ray?
I think I would also I would try to do that, but I would also continue to reach for the cane. I'm saying what Joyce just said, I'm reaching for my cane. Hopefully, the person won't pull me away so that I can't reach for it. But I'm just going to do the. You know, the action that accompanies what I'm saying is I'm going to continue to reach him for my cane. Because frankly, I wouldn't feel comfortable up there without it.
Cheryl? I know.
One side of the room to the other and back and forth. Just call me a ping pong ball.
We should have everybody move on.
Ping pong ball, okay. Now, somebody like myself, who is legally blind, not totally blind, I get both sides of the coin. Sometimes I get, oh, you don't need it. You can see. You don't need the dog. You don't need the cane. Or I get, I listen, and I always go back on my history and the history of the NFB, and I may be getting off site here, but with the NFB in general, I always go back to Dr. Maurer's recordings or Dr. Jernigan, who I didn't know, but I know him by his recordings. Is like one of his speeches is about knowing your independence, whether you're going with the sighted guide or not, or with a dog or not. I bring all this into my head, but at the same token, if somebody's coming up to me and they're grabbing me and I say, excuse me, thank you very much, but I'm using my dog or I'm using my cane. And, you know, some people get it, and sometimes you have to be a little more forceful, or I say be more of a New Yorker. But, you know, it's just saying, you know, I got this. Thank you very much. So that's what I wanted to say on the matter.
I didn't catch who that was. Khadija, before you speak, let me just say something. Remember now, your whole audience is watching this scene. Whatever's going on, they don't know. They're watching the scene. So whatever it is, you're going to have to do it pretty smoothly. Khadija.
So I can very much relate to this topic because being in New York City and traveling in the subway stations every day, people kind of tend to grab you all the time. It's a lot in the subway stations because there's a lot of stairs. You have to go in and out of trains. You have to find seats in a train. So going up or downstairs, you know, I might not ask for help. If somebody's just passing by, it's happened quite a few times. They just grab my arm and start pulling me up the stairs. At that point, it's kind of too late because it's already in motion. But if they ask me, I've narrowed my response down to, I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to get into an argument when, you know, everybody's in a rush, people are running around everywhere. So, I've managed to narrow it down to that. And if someone's already grabbing me and dragging me up the stairs, I really don't have time to stand in the middle of a flight of stairs and say, let go of me, I'm fine. So, I mean, that's pretty much it.
So you don't want to say that on the stairs because you don't want to create a scene, right?
I don't want to create a scene, and there's already a lot of other people going up and down. You know, you don't want to stop their...
stop the whole flow?
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Other thoughts? So, I guess, you know, it's always a difficult thing. I might have... Because of the fact that there were people watching. I've had this kind of thing happen. I might have accepted the help because it was offered at such a, you know, at a weird time when I couldn't say yes or no. But for myself, I would have grabbed my cane also. Or if I had a dog, I would have grabbed the dog too. And I would have, and the person might be saying, no, you won't need your dog or your cane. It's okay. But in the meantime, I'm still getting my dog's harness or my cane in my hand. It's still happening. And I'm just saying to them, it's okay. I'll take them. You can guide me up. That way they get a chance to do what they wanted to do. And I get a chance to do what I wanted to do is make sure I have my mobility so that if anything happened. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I've been in a room where something caught fire. I was standing on the risers with a bunch of people on my course, and not one of them thought to assist me. But my dog was in the first row. I had only to snap my fingers, and she was there, and I had no trouble. But you know, I cannot imagine a situation where I wouldn't have my mobility assistance there. Any other thoughts on this one? David.
I've been in a situation like that, and what I say to people is, you know, you can help me, but I'm taking my cane because you usually... You take care of yourself and part of me, and it's the other part of me I'm worried about. Meaning that they don't watch out for all of me. They watch out for all of them and part of me. And I said, I have to protect the other part of me, so I'll take my cane with me.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. Anyone else? Now, I'm open to other topics. You know, I am not married to this topic alone. I just thought we'd use it as an icebreaker. Anybody have any others that you'd like to bring up? I'm sorry, I had two things. Ray, what did you say?
I was thinking we should introduce ourselves.
Oh, as we speak? Oh, sure. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'll go first. I'm Mike Robinson, second vice president of New York State, the whole state.
Ray Wayne, treasurer of NFE of New York State.
Joyce Carrico, help fundraise for New York City chapter.
Brianna, I'm part of the Syracuse chapter and a scholarship winner this year.
Yay! Give her a hand. Glad you're with us, Brianna.
Khadija, I'm one of the other scholarship winners. And
yay.
I'm from New York City.
I'm Kathleen, and I work with a student at a public school that's blind.
I'm sorry, could you talk into that mic a little bit more? I didn't catch it.
I'm Kathleen, and I work with a student at a public school that's blind. I'm a teacher's aide.
Okay. Nice.
My name is Kathy, and I'm a TVI.
Glad you're with us, both of you.
My name is Barb, and I work with doing the brailing for my students in public school.
Great. Glad to have you with us, Barb.
My name is Diane Jordan, and I'm my own committee of one to always speak out for the common person.
Okay, and you're a member of the Buffalo chapter, right,
yes.
Diane?
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to want to share that with you, but she is one of ours.
Yes.
Cheryl Echeverria, Vice President, Long Island chapter.
David Stair, president of the Greater Long Island chapter.
Getting a little impatient there, Jim. Getting a little impatient.
I'm Harold Wenning, and I'm a member of this organization since 1973.
I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's 1973, I'm thinking.
But wait a minute. Will you still, are you 64? That's the thing.
What?
Okay.
Huh? I'm Jim Bonarbo, and I'm revitalizing the Westchester chapter of the NFP.
I'm glad to hear that.
And that's everybody, Mindy.
Good. Well, we'll talk. Let's talk, because we need to know that. But that's great. Okay, that's it. Okay, great. Oh, not right now. No, that will be tomorrow morning. Cool. No, Sunday morning. I have my days mixed up. Okay. All right. Are there other issues? Because I have one. If you don't, anything else you'd like us to talk about? What you'd like to do? How you'd like to know how to handle certain things? Cheryl. It's all right.
This affected me when I started, and we're finding it with our chapter. We have found some members out on Long Island that are coming to our meeting that are newly blind, and how to high partials, totals, whatever it is, being legally blind, to talk to them about their new life experiences and how scared they are, and maybe bring it up with our own members of them either, you know, becoming newly blind or going through the issues of, are you still afraid, or are we there not afraid yet of being blind?
Oh, okay, so how to approach people who are newly blind and help them to get used to the new kind of new way of doing old things? Is that what you're saying? How to become more comfortable with themselves?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Man, that is one heck of a topic.
It's a great topic. Though.
It is. It's really important, and there are so many ways of approaching it. So, I'd like to hear if anybody has thoughts about it. Let me flesh it out a little bit more for you. Because I work with people all the time who are newly blind, and generally they're seniors, and they don't really want to lose touch with society, but on the other hand, they don't know how to get with it. They don't know how to remain a part of it because they feel that they need help in everything that they do. And it's very hard to convince people that they don't, because as you know, it takes time to learn new things. So I'm going to leave it at that and let the theoretical be, let the, let's take this as our scenario. The person comes to a chapter meeting. Ooh, sorry, I'm causing that. The person comes to a chapter meeting and basically says to us, I guess that my life is almost over because I'm not really sure how to do anything. I have to have people with me all the time to do everything. Where are we? How do we handle it? How do we help them to begin to feel more comfortable with themselves? Brianna?
I would ask them, what in their life can't they do without help? And then come up with plans of how they can do that on their own. Like, if they feel like they can't even dial their phone and call their friends, I'd say tell them different kinds of phones that they can buy with Braille or with large print letters and other things like that. I would ask them specifically what they have trouble with and help.
So you're saying that you would start to right away to get into the very specific things. Anybody else?
Diane Jordan.
Diane?
Hold on, Diane. Yeah, wait for the microphone. We're recording and streaming this too here.
I became totally blind in 2007, and I was a senior at the time. I guess I was about 65 years old. And I can only speak from my experience. My experience is that you need help. You need someone needs to assist you when you first become blind, just about in everything you do, because of the situation of being blind. And you just need help. And I mean, it sounds so strange when people say they don't need help. You know, just an extension of how much help I need, but I always need, I call it assistance. I help myself and you assist me. I need assistance and I am able to overcome and do the things that I do.
So Diane, you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
You just lost your vision. You wake up in the morning. What's the first thing you have trouble doing?
I cry. Okay. I used to cry. When I wake up in the morning, I would cry.
Okay.
I just didn't think I could do it. I really felt that I would just have a nervous breakdown.
So that's was typical.
That's the real deal.
Yeah.
And as time went by, and I was more, my personality was just so determined that I overcame a lot of things. And I have a daughter that was always very aggressive with me. I mean, you know, I had a cane, I had to use it, you know. She let me hold on to her, but she wasn't leading me around. So I think that helped me in a lot of ways.
That's great.
I think it's very difficult to be blind. I really do. I hear people in this room sometime, and I think, are these people really blind? I mean.
Yeah, you do, right?
Because they always sound so confident, and, you know, they don't want people doing this, and they don't want people doing that. I mean, I don't want people doing a lot of things for me, but I do understand how a sighted person feels. I have a lot of sensitivity with them.
Sure.
You know.
So I hear what you're saying. But I want to flesh out where you're going with this, because I think that there are a lot of people in the room who either lost their vision so long ago that they don't remember, or there are people, or they never had much vision anyway. Yeah. So I want to know, after you cried, you woke up, you cried, next?
I decided I was going to be as independent as I could.
Okay.
And yeah. I strived for that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. See, and so that's why you're here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I was to talk to somebody who had recently became blind, I would tell them that they have to determine themselves that they're going to be independent. And then they can be more comfortable with what's going on in their lives, and they can learn to live and to be a part of a lot of things. But they have to make that decision all on their own.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying, though, that has to come from inside of them, right?
Yes. I think you can encourage them, and when I first became blind, I lived with my daughter for a while, but that didn't work. So then I moved into an apartment by myself, and everybody's always astonished that I am able to manage as well as I can. But it's only because of determination.
Okay, I hear you. But I think there are probably other factors, too. And so, although I agree with you, I think that in the end, the decision has to come from you, and the decision to do it has to come from you. But I think people can affect you, so I'm going to call on somebody else if there's anybody else that wants to say something. What else? Now you know that the person you're talking to who has just come to the meeting has said to you, I am so down that every morning when I wake up, I cry. Okay? That's the first thing you know about the person. Is there anything you can say or do to help that person along?
Well, first of all, I have to vouch for Diane. She oozes personality.
Yeah, I know. That's true. But that's just the thing. A lot of people who lose their vision don't.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, most don't. And I've had people who've said to me, I want to kill myself because now that I'm blind, I can't do anything. But on the other hand, I have a 93-year-old who is learning to use the computer right now because she's darned if she's not going to be able to continue her writing. She was a writer. She was an art dealer. She can't deal art anymore, but she feels that she can write. And so she's sitting down at her computer plunking out every day. But why? Why might she be doing that? And what can we do? Okay, because we're here to help one another, right? And when you brought this up, Cheryl, I'm guessing that something or someone helped you to get your act together with it. Yours was a little bit different story because it was diabetes, but something helped you along. Joyce.
You misunderstood Mike to be Joyce, but that's okay.
I think I would ask the person what they did before, because one of the first things when people lose their vision, they think somehow they become a different person, that they've lost the abilities that they had before. It makes a big difference whether the person was a prima donna and everybody waited on her before and then she lost her vision versus a person who was a magazine editor and lived an independent life as to how the kind of person she's going to be. So I think knowing the kind of person they were before they lost their vision is helpful. But I think as I escorted someone to their seat, if they just came for the first time, I would put their hand on the back of the chair and say, here's the back of the chair. And they then would orient themselves to the chair, sit down, and I'd say, you just got your first lesson. You did that yourself. Now, if you can do that, what about doing some other things?
So Kevin Worley has walked in, and he's joining me up here. I'm going to give him the mic and let him get a word in edgewise here.
Now y'all are in trouble. Actually, I was in the back. Hello. Kind of doing you kind of doing. It's kind of coming and going and whatever. I feel like I'm on a long-distance radio station. When I lived in Illinois, I would listen to New York stations, and they would kind of go in and go out, you see. You know, your point to me resonated with me. I just think it really does matter when someone loses vision from where they are coming before they experience sight loss. You know, are they 18 and were playing football? Or are they 72 and have been waited on much of their life anyway? Or are they 58 and very, very engaged, a lawyer, a writer, an assembly worker that really was the foreman on the line? It depends from where they come. And the notion that we sometimes fall into, I think, in the National Federation of the Blind, because of our philosophy, is that you can live the life you want, and by golly, come join the Federation and live the life you want. Well, that's what we believe, but we have to meet people where they are, not where we're trying to get them, where we're trying. Well, so I think your point is so well taken, to figure out where they are. Also, there'll be cultural differences, socioeconomic differences, and what we want to do in the National Federation of the Blind in terms of, I think, empowering people is to also understand that we're all different. And I tell people, we were in California over the past several months, my colleague Rachel, Jessica and I doing organizing, and we went to some places in California where there was just all politics and people were grumbling at one another, and I said, look, our job is to love people into the National Federation of the Blind. To me, that's it. We want to love people into the National Federation of the Blind, because when they can get into the Federation, then no matter where they're coming from, they can be inspired, and not everybody's going to jump on board and understand our fair wage position. Not everybody is can teach, but we can find ways to make them live the lives they want. That's why I love this discussion so much. Here you go.
So here's what I'm doing. I'm banging on the mic, which helps me nothing because the actual noise is coming from the speakers.
Right.
I'm glad I can help you with that handoff.
We got it, though.
Always good help, baby.
All right, so let me tell you one of the things that I have noticed before. I have noticed that sometimes when people have lost vision or just don't have skills, I've noticed, you know, we are a pretty independent lot here, and we teach one another to be independent. And I've noticed people saying things like, why are you getting help traveling everywhere you go? You can learn to do this by yourself, okay? And I think there are other ways of accomplishing that very same thing. So let me throw that out to you. You know that somebody, every single time they come to the meeting, they've been there three times. Every single time they come to the meeting, they have brought somebody with them. What's your reaction?
Harold.
Do we have somebody to run the mic? Okay. Thank you.
No. No, really. I've done this before. People have walked me to places where I know where I'm going. And I don't refuse them because I feel I can maybe talk to them and explain to them, you know, what it's like to be blind and so forth. I'm not afraid of having people walk with me. In fact, sometimes I enjoy it. And in some cases where I need help, like in an airport, I don't care. That's a big place. I mean, I don't go there every day. You know, and people read signs. I don't read signs. So I have to depend on people. So, I mean, I'm not afraid to ask people for help if I need it. But when I do need it, don't need it, and they ask for help, it depends on how they ask. If I feel it's a person that's going to maybe do something to me, I'll refuse it. But otherwise, I'll accept people. Or somebody will grab a hold. Like, a lot of times I'll cross 30 in New York City. I cross busy street, 34th Street and 7th Avenue in Manhattan, near Penn Station. That's Midtown Manhattan. That's a busy place. And people will grab my arm and help me walk across the street. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind that at all. And I'll talk to them. You know, I'll say, you know, what's your name? Or I'll ask them your name, where they're going. Hey, you know, I learned a lot of things about people crossing the street. I mean, that's only, what, about 50 feet? You can learn a lot in 50 feet, but you can tell a lot of people about yourself, too, in 50 feet.
It's a whole book's worth, right?
Yeah. It's important that you meet these people. And because they don't know what blindness really is, you know. And some people are nasty. Some blind people are nasty. I know this.
Yeah. Okay, so Harold, what you're saying, though, is that if somebody is newly blind and they are wondering, you know, if what they're doing is okay, asking for help, you're feeling is, yes, there are times when you should certainly ask for help, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But so my question then to the group is, the person has now come to the meeting three times, and each time they've brought somebody with them. And there have been times in years past when people would have said to them, why are you doing that? By now you ought to be out there learning to travel and to be here anyway. And it used to be a very common response from Federation members. And I always tell people, you know, we're not your dad's, we're not your father's Federation anymore, but how would you handle that? Or would you?
I would find out why he's doing it, why he or he is doing it. Does she need some confidence? Does she need some guidance? from the older members of the Federation, the people who have been blind longer. I mean, I met a person years ago. He lost his sight. He had acid thrown in his face, and he lost his sight. And he felt very, very bitter. And I met him 10 years later, and he was practically the same person. He didn't grow. He used to run his own business. He had a hardware store. And he still had the hardware store when I met him 10 years later. But he wasn't really running it. He was, you know, he was there. I mean, he did some things, but not everything. He wasn't that active in the store. He was telling me, "Gee, whiz, I can put up these cans of I forget what it was, but he was showing me how he did it, and he said I did it this way." But it took him a long time to learn that. I mean, and that's sad. But then the Federation wasn't that strong at those times. You remember, the agencies were really dominant over blind people in the 50s and the 60s. I don't want to go back to that era. I really don't. I've lived through it.
Right. It's a very scary thing.
It is scary, yeah. People.
So let me just ask, though, does anybody else have any comments about the topic of newly blind? Jim. But say your name next time, because just in case I don't recognize your voice.
Right, I got the mic.
Right.
Everybody, I got the mic. Look, I lost my sight. Everybody knows that. I was old when I lost my sight, and I sat on my butt for a while till I realized it. But the point is, I found that as I dealt with people, and I deal with people through my business relationships, through the Lions Club, other organizations, they know I'm blind, but once they know me, they accept me for what I am, and they know that, you know, I have some smarts, of course, and they accept me as we are, and the blindness is never an issue. I mean, I'm dealing with banks and dealing with other stuff. They look at my knowledge and my ability, not the fact that I have a disability, and I think that's what we have to get over, and we have to understand that, and we have to get out with people and go to meet people and be involved in these organizations, the Lions Club and so on. And once they see that you're just as human as they are and a bunch of pain in the necks as they are, they get along and everything gets fine. And this is what we have to learn. I'm sorry. And I've gone through it. And
I got
the first meeting I had, the NFP was like family. And now I understand. But
right.
People have to get out and meet other people on a one-to-one basis. And people will be accepted regardless of the fact that they're blind or not. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Joyce? Oh, okay. Was that? I'll get Joyce and then Cheryl. Is that? Yeah. Joyce, we have
when a
Joyce, you may want to raise your hand.
There's a tremendous learning curve, and there's a lot to learn. I think I would say to the person, wow, you know, I'm just glad you're here and you're out and you're meeting with all of us and you're seeing what other people are doing right now. How are you coming along at learning things? Have you gotten to the point where you're starting to think about or starting to use your cane? Because where they are in the learning curve and where they are in the learning their skills makes a big difference. If they haven't even gotten to the point where they're using their cane, then you know they're not ready for training to come to the meeting yet. But if they've started travel skills and started mobility instructions and they're starting to go around their block, that's a different story. So I think you need to find out where they are and, again, meet them there.
Okay. Cheryl?
Then Worley.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't catch what you said, Cheryl.
No, I was waiting for the mic. I'm okay. Here. To one thing, the reason why the person may be bringing somebody with him, it may be a confidence need, even though you can do it. I mean, I know myself being an adult losing my vision, even though my husband is a paid member of the NFBA and he's sighted and has to take me to meetings. That's why he comes and he stays and he's here today. But the other thing is somebody may not be, even though they're doing every single thing right, using the cane, using the dog, they may not be comfortable in their own skin to say, I'm here by myself. That could be an issue why the person is still coming with somebody that's sighted, or maybe that sighted person likes what we're doing and stays.
You know, I think that's absolutely, Cheryl, that's absolutely right. People have to be comfortable in their skin. Look, I go back to essentially what I said earlier. You have to love people where they are. The National Federation of the Blind is not a judging organization, or at least that ought not be who we are. We need to be a welcoming organization. Look, there may be some folks that will contribute in their way and never use a cane or a dog. I could, look, you know, read Dr. Jernigan's The Nature of Independence. If I was a billionaire, I may choose to be an active member of the National Federation of the Blind and have somebody carry me in on my chair. I could afford it. So you never know. Look, but our job is to role model expectations, it seems to me, to just by our actions and our love and our care for one another say, look, gosh, do you want to have the life that Harold's having, bebopping around Manhattan? Or do you want to choose the life that Sarah Schmigowitz has happened, just sitting on her couch, rocking? Well, people have choice. And in the National Federation of the Blind, I think we can role model. Every day we raise expectations. Why? Because we know that low expectations are obstacles that stand between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want when we role model it, when we live it, when we love it. We don't have to judge people. Let them be who they are. But when they ask, hey, sleep shade training at Blind Inc. or Louisiana or, you know, that great Colorado Center for the Blind. Why do we do those things? There are reasons why the most effective, most productive, most engaged blind people are the ones that use the alternative techniques. That doesn't mean we have to demand that other people do. We're a big tent in the National Federation of the Blind. I'm going to say one other story, if you don't mind. So, a man who is in our chapter in Colorado Springs, he's got pretty good usable vision. He has been losing vision. So he's noticed that I travel better than he does, but he doesn't really, not ready to do the long white cane. He's scared of sleep shade training. And he truly is. We can't deny the fact that he's fearful of it. But you know what? Recently he came to me and said, would you be willing to walk around the halls and let me use the cane if I take your elbow? And I'll go under sleep shade, but I want to know that I can have your elbow. Man scared to death, but he came to me. He came to me. Hang on a second. Let me try this one. 1, 2, 3. Check, check, check. He came to me offline. Nobody knows. Well, except now you guys know, but you don't know his name. Brian Smith. Oh, wait. We're on the internet. We had a wonderful time. But it took him years to get to the point where he wanted to try some new things. That's because we didn't judge. We accept him where they are. Here you go. No, Mindy, there you go. Now you got a different mic.
Okay, here you go.
Thanks, Mindy. Thanks
sure.
for that opportunity.
Thank you. Okay, Carl?
Yeah, and Kevin made a point before. He used the word choice. And oftentimes, either because of our upbringing, when we're born as blind children, our parents have already decided what our choices will be, and they make them for us. Or we go blind later in life. Society has already told us what blind people are like and what we should be expect as a blind person. So society has, in a sense, through its values, placed choices in our path or taken our choices away. Therefore, we have limited choices when we either are born blind with parents who don't have the enlightened attitude yet or become blind and have inculcated society's values for our choices. So what we have there is no choice. We don't have real choices to make because nobody has given us choices. And what the National Federation of the Blind will do for us is give us our choices back. Now we have something to choose from. It's like coming to your house for dinner and all you're offered is a plate of pasta. Well, if that's all there is, that's all there is. But there's a lot more in life than a plate of pasta. And when you're offered more than just a plate of pasta, now you have choices. You can have the full range of dinner choices there, because you know now there are choices to be had. And now you can live the life you want. You didn't really want a life full of pasta, well, unless you're Italian. But other than that, you have a life full of roast beef and full of shrimp and full of ice cream. Yeah. But other than that, we have given choice back to blind people that they always had, but they never knew they had it before. We have given that back, and for that, we are all truly grateful. I could keep on talking, but I can give the mic back to the first vice president.
David Stair.
So I will shut up for a while and thank God for my choices.
David?
What's been said,
Hold on, David. Your mic is out. Maybe pull it away from your... I'm not quite sure what to tell you.
No. Test.
There it is.
Is it back?
Yep. Yeah.
In the social work profession, which I've been in for years, one of the things that we learned is that we have to go where the person is. I think fall into the trap. You know, we have to remember that when we're talking about the life you want to live, that's that person. It's not the one necessarily that we want for them. It's the one that they want. It's the one they're comfortable with. And I think through the love that we show, and hopefully the encouragement we give as role models, whatever that person's life is, that's the life they want. Try and help them do.
That's right. All right, I have another topic in my head, unless there are further discussions on this one. Okay. We have not talked about this in a long, long time, so I'm going to bring it up again, because I think there are a lot of people in the room who never have been in on these discussions, and that is, what do you do about transportation systems, theaters, things like that, where you are offered half fare if it's transportation, or you go to a theater and you can get tickets for part of the price. You don't have to pay the whole price. We're asking for equality in NFB. We're saying that we want equal treatment. Do we accept half fare? Do we accept tickets at the theater that cost less? So that's the question. Do we? Okay. Any thoughts? Okay.
Sure.
Oh, you said
Cheryl.
Okay.
Cheryl called for the floor first.
Okay, Cheryl, and then I've got Carl up here. Cheryl?
Yes, well, like you said, quality, I totally agree with you that if a movie ticket is $7, it's $7. But we do offer discounts for those that are seniors. If you're a senior, you're getting it because you're not because you're disabled. And I think that should be offered the same exact way. That's only my thought about the whole situation.
Okay, Carl called next, so there you go.
Let's take a look for a second, and this won't take too long, but let's take a look for a second at the genesis of the half-fare system. The half-fare system is an economic right or an economic privilege granted to the citizenry. It's not based on disability, although it says aged, blind, and disabled on the card. It does mean aged, blind, and disabled, but the assumption that is made about aged, blind, and disabled is that we live on a fixed income. And generally speaking, with our 70% unemployment, and with senior citizens living on Social Security, and with other disabilities living on reduced income, we generally don't have the ability to afford full fare. It's driven by that economic factor. So because you fit one of those categories, the assumption is generally, and it's generally true, unfortunately, it's generally true, that most of us make less than somebody similarly situated, somebody who's 35 years old, has a master's degree, and has cited generally makes more than somebody who's 35 years old, has a master's degree, and is blind. So the assumption that generally plays out that their reasoning was valid, that you make less because you're aged, blind, or disabled. Now, if you are 35 years old or 40 years old and making $150,000, do you fit that category anymore, or do you fit the reason for the creation of that system? I would contend that you don't fit that that reason. So if you're making $150,000 a year, the system wasn't intended for you. You have the right to take it because it says aged, blind, or disabled, but it wasn't the reason for the creation of the system. So you have to make that choice in your own head. Do I take it or don't I? Was this designed for me, or was it designed for somebody less fortunate than I? So I'll pass that on again.
Okay, anybody else? Khadija, raise your hand.
Thanks. Actually, I was thinking the same point that Carl just said, and maybe it can be based on some... Oh, it's not working?
Actually, it is. Just if you can get a little closer to it, perhaps.
Okay. So maybe it can be based on some sort of annual income assessment, like being a student, they do that sort of thing with our college tuition, if we qualify for it or not. So besides half fare and ticket discounts, I was thinking more along the lines of not having to stand in lines if you go to, for example, Six Flags, because if you're 18-year-old and have vision, you may need to stand in line for an hour and a half, but if you have a cane in your hand, you get to skip all that and go straight to the rides. Actually, I have not experienced this myself, but I've seen people do it, and I've heard it from people, and I was completely flabbergasted. I said, why? Your only problem, okay, if you're in, you're unable to stand, you have some other health issues, that's completely fine. Maybe you shouldn't have to stand in a line, but if your only problem is your vision, why not just stand and move in a line with everybody else?
Yeah. Okay. Any other? That's, by the way, that's been our philosophical position for a long time, but I think there is a complexity there. I'm not gonna actually push that button. I'm gonna try to let some of you guys talk about the complexities. Anybody else? No? Okay, Kevin gets it.
I mean, I don't know that I want it. it's filled with complexities. Maybe it should be black and white. But I mean, Carl made a good point. You made a good point. It's pretty easy when you're at Six Flags or what's the studio down there in the Universal by Orlando. And it's 100 degrees and humid, and there's 82 people in front of you, and you're like, man, if I paid a bunch of money, if I don't cut a little bit, I'm only going to get 6 rides, whereas if I let them spirit me through here, through the air-conditioned, disabled tent, man, I'm going to be able to go 18 roller coasters. It's hard to say. We live in an age where people feel entitled. And it's kind of hard to stand up and go, you know what, I'm going to stand out here in the baking sun on terms of equality. I mean, it's a tough thing, you know. And it gets even more complicated. Last year, I went to Universal with a friend of mine who's in a wheelchair. The girlfriend was with us. She had a guide dog. We had 2 canes. So there's 4 of us. 1 guide dog, 2 canes, a wheelchair. Well, my goodness, you know, those park people didn't know what to do. We're bringing a whole brigade of craziness through there. So what were we supposed to do? Think about it with me. What were we supposed to do? Fight back? Well, no, it was just easier on everybody. Was I rationalizing? Should I have said, well, the wheelchair guy goes because he clearly needs to be, you know, helped a lot and put into the ride, which he does. There's no way he can do it if somebody doesn't lift him into the ride. Right? And he has to go a different way. He can't go up the steps like we can. Should I say, oh, you guys go ahead. I know we're having a family day together, but I'll wait in the sun. You go 19 rides, I get 2. Well, no, I went with him. The whole family experience. On the other hand, I have a friend of mine. He's a totally blind guy. He benefited from the Social Security system. In the recent years, he's benefited from the Randolph-Shepard program. All kinds of wonderful benefits that the society has bestowed on him, right? And yet, every time he goes to the airport, he and his wife do everything they can to play that blindness card to get special treatment, everything they can. If they can use it to get upgraded to first class, they do it. That bothers me. So it is not easy. There are times when I go with the flow, and I think all of us do, and say, you know what, maybe I'm rationalizing a little bit. But I'll tell you what, anytime we decide to play the blindness card for benefit after benefit after benefit, I think it cheapens my soul, not everybody else's. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. And I think that's what it comes down to. Any other thoughts? Brianna?
Okay. In my family, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. In my family, there are a lot of diseases and disabilities. And like my brother, he has spina bifida, and like the number one cause of death is suicide. So my mom knew that she had to raise him to be very independent and to be very confident in who he was. And it worked. He's still very happy with himself, even to this day. And I think a lot of times that how you're raised and how people treat you can affect your confidence, but only if you let it. But one of the things that my mom taught us growing up was that having a disability was a good thing because we got so many perks. Despite all the hardships, all the difficulties in your daily life, and how you have to do things different than a person with no disabilities, we always looked forward to going to Six Flags because he would be able to ride the ride two times in a row before having to get off. And because we were all there with him, we were able to as well. So I agree that we shouldn't try to play the card and take all the benefits that we possibly can, but I definitely go with the flow. If they're like, oh, well, it's really hard for us to take you out and then put you back in. So I guess I'm just trying to say that I agree, I guess.
Because here, it changes. It changes. Mindy, but I'm excited about what you're saying. I get real excited about people who are thinking critically about this. I don't want to go through my whole life thinking, ooh, should I have taken that or shouldn't. But I think it's good for us to think this through a little bit. You know, what I used to take, I don't anymore because it's better or maybe income is different. How come I always get these microphones that go? What is he doing to me? What's going on here? Hey, the Colorado guy, give him the bad mic. So, I mean, I love the fact that we're thinking this through a little bit. I think it's exciting to play with it and see what I think people different socioeconomic status matters. I think our confidence level matters. You know, yesterday on the way here, I'll talk about it tomorrow, I almost got thrown off an airplane. Not because I was acting like I had an attitude, but because I said, look, thank you very much. Ooh, I love it. I got like a valet, you know, just hands me different microphones. My coat, please, Jean. but I think it's interesting because I wasn't getting in this flight attendant's face. She gave me the briefing. I said, thank you. You don't really have to give a briefing. It's not an FAA regulation. And she said, I want to show you where the call button is. And she took my hand. And I said, now look, here, I appreciate that, but I know where it is. I fly once a week. Seriously, I'm 1K. I'm on the airline all the time. And I allowed you to give me the briefing. But now you're starting to cross the line because you're putting your physical self on me. I didn't ask for this. Well, she thought I was belligerent. I said it in exactly the tone I just told you. She went and got the captain. I'm thinking, it seems to me the captain ought to have bigger things to worry about when the gusts of wind and the rain in New Jersey are what they are, rather than get involved with me. And I said, Captain, you know, it's your ship. I'll do whatever you want to do. I simply was explaining to her I appreciated the help with the seating. I didn't even mind the extra briefing. But when you take my hand and start showing me stuff, I did not want to feel you've crossed a line, right? And tomorrow at the banquet, I'm going to talk about National No Grabbing Blind People Day. Talk to you later.
I think that's a great idea. I really do. Does anybody else have anything that they'd like to say about this? Friends? Oh, Diane, okay. Hold on, we're getting there. It's good to get to the microphone because then we all hear you a little bit better.
By the way, while I'm walking over to Diane, for those that are listening online, you can send your comments to convention@nfbny.org and we'll share them.
And if you're hearing us, you know, if they're hearing us from the NFB live room, is there a way that we can unlock the key so that I know, I was just going to say, if anybody wants to say anything, we'll know, because somebody will say something, and we only need to give that a second or so. Okay. All right, I'm sorry. Diane, you've got the mic?
Yeah, I might have lost my thought by now. I'm an old lady.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, you know, it's a personal opinion of whether or not you take advantage of what's offered to you because of your disability. I know I worked for the county all my life, and people that would come in, they take advantage of whatever is offered. So now in my age, whatever is offered, I take it, and I don't feel guilty about it. If you're harming somebody and taking it, then I think there's a problem. I mean, if you're in line waiting, and there's a senior waiting also who has some problems, and they only offer it to you, you know, you could say, well, let this person go ahead, maybe. But I feel very comfortable in taking whatever the Congress has said I can have. So it's just a personal thing, and you can't blame another person because they're taking it because you don't know their reasoning. So that's just my opinion.
Oh, hear, hear. Anybody else? Friends, we thank you so much for being a part of the discussion this afternoon. And we're going to take 10 minutes or so before the division meetings. If you don't have a division meeting to go to, the diabetic division is going to be in 723. And the guide dog users of New York are going to be in 724. Okay, so that's where the 2:30 meetings are going to be. We'll be back in this room for the board meeting at 4 p.m. Okay?
Mike?
Yep, Mike.
A couple other things also. From 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock, one of our speakers, Art Schreiber, who toured with the Beatles, is going to be interviewed on WBEN. And I'm going to stream that live into this room so you can listen to it. Come in here and listen to his interview if you want. It's a local radio station talk show. Also, if you need coupons for Denny's to give a 10% donation back to
our children,
the Bell program, by all means, see me or see almost, you know, just ask around. Just about everybody's got coupons, and they'd love to share them. They'd love to run out and have to find me to get more. I think there's some also on the counter down at the restaurant.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Just ask for them or tell them you want to give the donation, and they'll. They won't do it unless you give them a coupon, and they're not going to offer you the coupon. So, by all means, get them and share them. You
or ask for it. You can sit right there at the table and ask for it,
yep.
too.
Yep.
And one more thing, scholarship class. We will see you in Prisms, which is the room right outside of the restaurant. Like it used to be the bar. And so scholarship class, we will see you there at 6. Between 5:30 and 6. It's 5:30? Well, that's what I thought, too, and then I thought somebody said 6. So 5:30. Okay, it's 5:30. It's on the first floor, and it's right outside of Denny's, to the right of Denny's, in the lobby. Okay? That's for the scholarship committee and the scholarship winners.
And that reminds me, hospitality tonight, as long as we're talking.
Oh.
Hospitality room will be in this room. We've got music. We're going to do some karaoke. We're going to, you know, make a donation to Bell, and we'll let you sing a song, or make a donation to Bell, and we won't let you sing. It depends
right,
on
they're
going to
pay me not to sing.
We got beer, wine, pop. There's rumor there might be some snacks and pizza. I'm not positive about that because I'm trying not to be in charge of that one. But come on up from 7 o'clock until whenever, and have a little camaraderie and beer and pizza, and any money that we raise is going back to Bell also. So.
Okay. Thanks again, everybody.